welcome back to Community Connections for the second hour, and of course, being the first Wednesday, I've got to keep on, often say Tuesday, I don't know why I say that, but anyway, the first Wednesday of the month, we've got our private investigator, Peter, and he, of course, is Absolute Facts. Welcome, Peter.
Welcome, Alan, and thank you for having me.
No worries, we'd love to have you along. Now, when we parted last time, as we've got a couple of, certainly a question for you to take away this time, we have some interesting people ring up. What you were going to talk about, the person wanted to know how what you would do to become a private, or what maybe what you did, or the steps you need to follow to become a private investigator.
Yeah, so look, I mean, there's no specific qualifications or anything like that initially. What you do have to complete is what's called a Certificate 3 in Investigation Services, which is a course that has been offered by TAFE and also offered by some other external service providers. So you have to have a Certificate 3 to be able to apply for your private investigation licence. You have to be over the age of 18 years. You have to be an Australian citizen, and you have to obviously have a clean criminal record.
Peter, Certificate 3, what's entailed in getting that? How long, and what's it entail?
Yeah, look, I did my Certificate 3, obviously, quite a number of years ago. I actually did mine at Holmes Glen TAFE, if I remember correctly. And it was, I think I'd actually already been in the industry for a little while and actually had my licence, but I had to get my Certificate 3 to retain my licence or renew my licence. And it was, off the top of my head, it was about 12 evening classes. And the majority of that was is concentrating on the legislation and the law, so that that you were encouraged not to sort of try and breach the law, and you knew where the black and the white delineations were. And I actually have gone on to get my Certificate 4 a little bit further down the track. So that's the next step up, of course. And the licensing body, which is Victoria Police, encourage you to be a member of one of the peak bodies for the industry. Yep. Was actually mandatory at one point, but I'm not 100% sure it's mandatory at the moment.
All right. Peter, what does the Certificate 4 do then? That's obviously more complicated. Is that the idea, or does it cover more, or is it still mainly law?
Yeah, look, again, it was they brought it in for a while that you actually had to have a Certificate 4 to renew your licence. So it's, they go through sort of periods of renewing and sort of upping the ante as to what's required.
Yep.
And that usually is a result of something in the media or some sort of negative publicity. So they basically raise the bar a little bit and things like that. So I'm not aware, as I say, at the moment, I don't think you have to necessarily be a member of a peak body, although it is encouraged.
Yep.
And I believe from what I'm reading, the minimum is a Certificate 3 at this point in time.
Peter, it's probably a bit unfair, and if you don't want to answer it, I'm more than happy for you not to answer it. Do you get many cowboys, like people that come in that think, oh, and then sort of, oh, I don't know, throw their weight around and all sorts of stuff? Do you get many that don't continue on? And if you don't want to answer that, I'm happy with that.
No, look, I think it's a cross-section of society like anything else. Obviously, I suspect, and I don't know the statistic, but a high number of private investigators or licensed inquiry agents would be former police officers. They tend to drift in or semi-retire into that sort of area.
Yep.
And, you know, again, people have to remember that there's basically no powers whatsoever that the license affords you. There's no powers at all. You can go anywhere as any member of the public can do. You can't go anywhere else. You're subject to the same trespass laws and harassment laws and things like that. You can search public records, but then so can anyone else for that matter.
But Mr. and Ms. Average don't always know where to go though either, do they?
No, that's the point. And obviously you find out information through observation or if it's insurance or a legal matter, you might actually undertake interviews. So that's the other aspect. And the other thing to bear in mind, and I think we've touched on this before, is the detailed written reports and audio or visual or both reports or records that that a private investigator provides, they are admissible in court. Right. and can be of use to whichever side of the coin you're representing.
Peter, if I was doing this, well, if I was doing this interview by phone, and, well, we're doing it remotely, and you know what we're doing, if I had somebody ring in, I have to tell them, warn them that they're going to air, don't I?
Well, that would more to do with your radio licensing than a private investigator's license.
That was going to be my next question. If you're recording a surveillance, I don't know whether you ever do that, whether there's people that you're actually monitoring and able to pick up what they're saying. Are you allowed to do that, or would you have to say to people, well, I'm recording this?
Okay, so you've touched on a really good point there, and there is, and I have to point this out, there is a massive difference between photography and video as opposed to audio.
Right.
Now, photography and video is quite an easy one. Basically, if you're in a public place, whatever you can record or gather or zoom in on, and if you think of the paparazzi that are zooming, you know, 20 kilometres away to someone nude sunbaking on a boat or something, well, basically that's all, that's open slather, if you like.
Right.
Now, audio is a completely different kettle of fish.
Is it?
And that is controlled by the Surveillance Devices Act. And without a third party's permission, you should not obtain audio. And I'm using the word should deliberately because the actual breach in the legislation occurs if a third party hears the audio.
So let me ask you another question, and I might be getting too technical. So you could record it as long as you didn't pass it onto a third person. What if you pass it on to a judge?
Well, if the the weight of the evidence was so important, I think a judge would probably turn a blind eye to how it was gathered.
But you couldn't
I'll just use an example. Yeah. If it was something like, say, child abuse or something, and you obtained audio of a child being abused and, you know, screaming and being hit and things like that, if you were to obtain that, and obviously the person performing the abuse is not going to be aware that you're obtaining that for sure, because they wouldn't do it, would they?
No.
If that went to court or went to perhaps police and then on to court, I think the value of that would probably outweigh the fact that there's a technical breach of the Surveillance Devices Act or the Privacy Act.
I was going to ask you that. Like you said, the judge would accept it, but would the police accept it as well? I was going to ask that, how you'd go letting something go to the police.
Well, I think it's comes down to personality and how important it is, but I would suspect, and I've actually had this happen once, that the value of what you're obtaining outweighs the technical breach of the law.
Oh, that's good.
Yes, it got accepted.
I was going to say, so the judge could actually slap me on the wrist and say, don't do it again, Peter, but I want to hear it anyway.
Yeah, sort of, yeah. It's a bit of a grey area, and I can't be absolute in what I'm saying, but yes, you can understand the machinations and the sort of the grey area that you can come across. And that's true for a lot of things that we might get involved in, and a lot of times you might have to say to the client, well, I can't really help you with that. So, again, under my provisions of, in fact, not only as a private investigator but as a member of the public, I'm not able to enable you to breach a federal law, whether that's, sort of a vehicle tracking situation or a telephone monitoring situation. if I enable you to do that, I'm actually breaching the law as well, the privacy.
Let's just, I've got to take a break in a minute, but I'm fascinated by this and I'd like to just take it one further. I know if the police want to phone tap anybody's phone, they have to go and get a court order to do it. Is a private investigator allowed to make an application or
Not that I'm aware of. You'd have to basically have a police interest in the matter. Right. And they would take the case over.
Ah, beauty. All right, we'll take a quick break, and I believe you've got a court case you're going to tell us about.
Sure.
All right, we'll be back in a couple of minutes, Peter.
The beat goes on. The beat goes on. Drums keep pounding a rhythm to the brain. La-da-da-da-dee. La-da-da-da-da. Charleston was once the rage, uh-huh. History has turned the page, uh-huh. The miniskirt's the current thing, uh-huh. Goes on, the beat goes on. The drums keep pounding a rhythm to the brain. La da 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 dee, la da 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 da. The grocery store, the supermarket. Still keep on marching off to war. Electrically they keep a baseball score. And the beat goes on. The beat goes on.
Drums keep pounding a rhythm to the brain. La-da-da-da-dee, la-da-da-da-da.
Grandma's sitting chairs and reminisce. Boys keep chasing girls to get a kiss. The cars keep a-going faster all the time. Goes on. The beat goes on.
Drums keep pounding a rhythm to the brain.
La da 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 dee. La da 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 da. And the beat goes on.
Yes, the beat goes on.
And the beat goes on.
And the beat goes on.
That was going way back in time, and that was Sonny and Cher, and the beat goes on, and on, and as I said before, there's always great music, and Matt Shaw will be on this Sunday between 6 and 8 with a rock and roll hit parade, but we're talking to our private investigator, Peter, from Absolute Facts. Peter, if the person gets their licence, and I know you've done a lot of work on this, what would be that you would find that the private investigator does most of?
Yeah, so look, I actually looked this up and reiterated my experience over the 30-year journey. So broken up into things like surveillance, monitoring and vehicle tracking. So that's monitoring an address, a location, a person and following vehicles as necessary, and obviously recording all activities as best as possible. Yeah. Personal background and history or historical checks. So I loosely call that sort of probity work when you're doing, you're looking into someone's background. Yep. And that's sort of the confirm and deny aspect as well, where people might claim certain things, claim to fame and things along those lines, and you can basically go and try and verify that. Relationship issues, which is the obvious one and what most people immediately think of. Employee absenteeism, that's another one that comes up from time to time. Missing persons, obviously.
Peter, can I just stop you there for a minute? When you say absenteeism, you're saying people that are rorting the system, is that what you mean?
Well, it could be, or there could be an element that they're perhaps moonlighting for themselves or for another entity, and could be something that's quite common for people in the sales rep type game when they're not actually out representing the company that's paying them.
But Peter, I was in sales for a lot of years.
Yeah. And probably, did you get caught out, Alan?
No, I never did. Never broke the rules.
No, you never got caught, is what you're saying.
No, so I never broke the rules.
Investigation, fraud and theft. So one of my special areas is the corporate fraud. And the other one I'll add in is, which wasn't actually on the list I put together, but family law is another one that comes up quite regularly as well. So that could be a husband not declaring an income or all of their income, assets, finding assets and missing assets, and other sort of distribution type things. So... that's sort of generally.
Peter, you just mentioned one thing while you were going through there. You were saying vehicle tracking. Now, I know some of that is following cars and that. Do the police or the the private investigators, are you allowed to put a tracking device on a vehicle? And if so, do you have to get a court? Do the police have to get a court order for that?
So we'll deal with the two separate categories there. So, yes, police, I am aware, particularly federal police, would have the ability to put vehicle tracking devices in.
Yep.
I believe they would have to get a warrant or a court order to be able to do that. So a magistrate has to sign off on it. A private investigator cannot do that legally. And people may be aware there are devices out there. I loosely call them toys because things like battery life and frequency and distance and things like that tend to be they're not as good as what they're cracked up to be. So if they say a distance of 5 kilometres, you probably find that's in the middle of the Sahara Desert and not actually in an urban environment.
Yep.
And to be honest, I don't use and I don't necessarily condone those things. But look, the products do exist and people may well try using them. But again, getting back to what we spoke about before, I can't really enable people to do that. But I'm sure some of your listeners are aware that there's places called spy shops and similar type setups that you can help yourself to some of that equipment.
Oh, right. I'm intrigued because I think there was a case, and I could be wrong, where some guy put something on his ex-wife's car, and I think that wound up in court. I think that's how I heard about it. And I was wondering then just how, well, I know he did it illegally, but whether the police and that were allowed to do that. But obviously, in a lot of cases, the police are able to, if they get court orders, do a lot of things, aren't they?
Yeah, and obviously the weight of the evidence that they're hoping to gather would be sufficient enough for a court order, whereas, a husband trying to find out who his next wife, who the next partner is, that's probably not, wouldn't fulfil the requirements of a court order. No. So, yes, you run the risk of getting into some rather serious trouble if you get caught putting devices in, particularly if it's a former partner as perhaps even opposed to a current one.
Yeah. Peter, you've got a case that you wanted to talk about.
Yeah, so one of the things which will give you people a bit more of an idea as to some of the shenanigans I get up to So I had an interesting court case, which I was I had a little bit of interest in. It was a party to in a small way, which happened in was heard in early September of this year, and with the offender, no names of course, no. Was actually was already in custody, and on this particular day in court was looking to plead guilty to 109 charges. So that's 109. Summarised as numerous deceptions undertaken via Gumtree or Facebook Marketplace, and that the unpaid for items were in turn offloaded at an undisclosed location in the western suburbs of Melbourne, and it was indicated by police that the defendant would receive about 70 cents in the dollar for the items that he collected but did not pay for. I was a little bit surprised that he was getting 70% in the dollar, but nevertheless, that's what they come up with. And equally, both police and for my purposes as well would love to know where that undisclosed location was, but at this stage it remains undisclosed, unfortunately. Anyways, if offending occurred over a period of 8 months until he was finally permanently put in custody in late May of this year, and basically what he was up to, Alan, was... he would contact people via Gumtree or Facebook in Marketplace, and he would show them on his phone that he'd made a payment or raised the payment, you know, on one of the sort of big four bank account apps or whatever, and then stated to his victims that it'd take a day or two for the funds to actually show up. So what he did was he actually raised the payments, but he never in fact authorised the payments, and so none of the victims received their money. So one of the things that came out of that was my first thought was hopefully many of your listeners are aware of the product called PayID or the OSKO process. That's O-S-K-O. And that basically is now automatic, immediate payment. So immediate showing of the funds into your bank account, instantaneous. So in today's technology, you probably shouldn't accept an explanation that the money's going to show up in a day or two, because it can actually be done effective immediately these days.
True. Yeah.
Anyway, so this chap, his offending included sundry purchases of things like iPads and Apple-type products, petrol drive-offs, theft of hardware and tools, drug possession, and at that point, he still remains in custody. As the magistrate has yet to determine the time served as adequate in respect to the extent of the offending. And further to that, the police informant on that date back in September indicated the value of restitution and pecuniary interest for all parties affected was just shy of $100,000. So it adds up, yeah. And what they and when I touch on the pecuniary interest, which is one of the first times I've seen this actually happen, and the magistrate needed a little bit of guidance on this one as well. But the police actually asked for and did effectively receive what's called a pecuniary recovery, which means that the $100,000 or thereabouts was actually put against the offender's name, and that. Attempts could be made to recover the money, although the likelihood of that ever occurring is probably highly unlikely.
Well, unless you owned a house or something, it's not going to happen, is it?
Yeah, it's going to leave a bit of a mark on his not only his criminal record, but his I dare say his credit rating is going to be pretty adverse for a number of years. So, yeah, that was an interesting one that came up, and that sort of gives your audience some of the things that I get involved in. We can have from time to time sat in on court hearings to glean information for my client and to find out, you know, sort of the modus operandi, what they're doing, how they're doing it and things like that, and that hopefully educates us. And as I said, if it had it been known where he was actually offloading their stolen goods, well, that would have been of interest not only to police but to ourselves as well.
Peter, I've just got to take a quick break. I've got a cough, sure. And I'll be back with more.
Hey, came in a heavy load.
Welcome back to Community Connections on Yarra Valley FM 99.1. I've got a bit of a frog in the throat. I swallowed some air a bit earlier in the day, Peter. Not that anyone cares, but it's given me a bit of a hard time. And the time at Yarra Valley FM is 20 minutes to 2, and I should mention Greg Carrick will be on with the council show from 2 to 3, and then 3 to 5, the Oz Indie Show. Always a terrific afternoon, and we're sitting on 13 degrees. And, of course, next Wednesday, oh, I nearly said it again, we've got two interviews. Of course, the first one being our legal hour with our legal people. And then, of course, we've got choice tunes. We've got the person all lined up, so it's going to be a great time. And I should mention P.I. Peter from Absolute Facts. We've did his on choice tunes. So if you go to our website, click on the podcast, then go up to the next thing where you see on the next screen, Choice Tunes. Click on that and go down there, if three or four, and you'll find Peter down there. Have you listened to it again, Peter?
Yes, I have actually once, thank you.
Oh, it came up really good.
Yeah.
Peter, what are we going to talk about now?
Right, so we touched on last month that that October was declared Cyber Security Month. Whether that was fortuitous or cobbled together in a real hurry, I'm not sure. And, of course, since the Optus breach, which was current at the time, we've now had the Woolworths one and the Medibank private one. And it seems to me that there's more to be revealed about the Medibank private data breach. But I think I mentioned last month I was an Optus victim and got notified that my driver's licence details, not the photo apparently, had been subject to the breach. And I lodged the form with Vic Rhodes, who have now got back and let me know that sometime before the end of the year I'm not sure whether I actually get a replacement licence or whether I get a sticker to put on the back of my licence. But that sticker or the replacement license will have a second identification number,
right?
Which, as I understand it, will be the number that you will use for your identification, you know, the 100 points to do the 100 things that you need to do for the 100 points or part of the 100 points. And if anyone's interested in more information, it's being released, but cyber.gov.au was the website to find out a bit more about your cyber security and what you should or shouldn't be doing along those lines.
Yep, it's getting serious, isn't it?
I think the concern is the fact that so many people are suffering from data breaches. I mean, we know that obviously, it's allegedly people from overseas are spending quite a deal of time and effort and money trying to hack into many databases around the world. But and I think, unfortunately, Optus at some point had made some declaration that they their cyber security was their information security was A1. So I think that might come back to bite them.
Well, you picked it. Well, anyway, Peter would be talking about it last month.
Yes, we did. And we touched on the fact that, and this has affected me as well, that that company directors have got to basically apply for a unique identification by the 30th of November, the 30th of this month, to get their unique company director identifier number. The problem with that is that you have to have a MyGov ID account. Now, that's a different account to the MyGov account. It's called the MyGov ID app. And in order to do that, obviously, you have to do your 100 points and presumably put in your driver's license if you don't hold a passport. I don't hold a passport, and I suspect a lot of people don't. There's no other form of photo ID that I can come up with. And I can't process my GovID app because my driver's license is currently flagged as being affected by the Optus data breach. So it's an interesting dilemma.
Oh, yeah. And it goes a lot further than what you think, too. And, of course, the other thing is they're frightened that people are going to use that to set up accounts too, aren't they?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. Yeah. And I have knowledge already that there are a number of false driver's licenses in circulation, and seemingly they're not too hard to get, and we have people that are walking around with multiple driver's licenses or forms of identity in their wallet or on their person. So it's becoming more and more perilous from that perspective, yeah.
And with the data breach... If they've got your Medicare number and other whole lot of other jazz, it's not hard to get 100 points up, particularly if you've got know the person's driver's license and all that too, is it?
Yeah, and it kind of also begs the question, Alan, is my particular Optus account is actually my company name, my business name. It has been for, I think I've been with Optus for certainly more than 10 years, probably getting on at least towards 15. The question is, after 15 years, why are Optus still retaining my driver's licence information?
Look, I reckon that's a good point. And I'm not even sure they need all that information. You're only opening an account, aren't you? Like, it's not like a multi-million dollar account you're opening. It's once it's open, and I guess once you've made four or five payments, why do they need anything about you?
Yeah, I think, and that might be something that comes out of this, because I did see a note, and I've forgotten the number, but Vic Roads have put out a statement saying how many licences they've had to reissue or amend or adjust, whatever the right terminology is. I can't remember the number, but it was quite significant. And, of course, Optus are going to have to pay Vic Roads for the whatever the fee is, which is, I think I understand, it's about $80 or something to have your normally to have your license or have a duplicate license made. So that's going to cost Optus a bit anyway. But further, and that's only in Victoria, of course. And then further to that, I suspect the government or whatever the department is that the privacy commissioner, they're going to hand out a pretty hefty fine. Yep. You'd hope, as a deterrent, because if it was me in business that had breached someone's privacy, I'm sure they'd come down on me with a ton of bricks. So it'd be interesting to see what the upshot of all this is going to be.
All right, Peter, I'll just take another quick break and we'll be back with more.
Love we found, left me in a lonely
welcome back to Community Connections, and we're talking to Peter from Absolute Facts. Peter, of course, is a private investigator, and we're really grateful to Peter that he gives up an hour of his time every month, and he'll be back the start of next month. Peter, we've had a phone call, and I'm going to give it to you, and this, I think, is a bit deeper than what it really sounds. What he wants the person, it was a guy, what are private investigators not allowed to do? Now, we've touched on a few of them about, you know, phone tapping and some of those things, but I'm going to throw something to you, and I don't want your answer yet, but if you can expand it a little bit rather than just against the law, I'm guessing, and I'm only guessing, that maybe you're not allowed to sit on juries because of your knowledge. I'm not saying that that's right or wrong. I don't know. So the person wants to know if there are a few things like that that because of your profession you're excluded from.
Yeah, so look, I'd say that you probably could use the fact you're a private investigator to not sit on a jury. And probably more so, I would suspect that one, if not both sides of the coin, would probably object you.
But yeah, have a bit of a look at that, though, please, Peter, in case there are other things that you really aren't allowed to do. The other thing too, we're starting to run out of time. So you mentioned earlier today, and this is not necessarily for next month, the one for next month is about what you're not allowed to do. You mentioned that quite often that the private investigators are ex-policemen who take their package and decide to go. Out of your experience, do they mainly take on criminal investigations, or do they do the same sorts of things that you do? Maybe some matrimonial, maybe this and maybe that.
Yeah, look a mix. I think a lot of them actually also get into insurance type investigations. So they set up a business along the lines that they will service one or a few insurance companies and perhaps go through the process to obtain a VWA, a Victorian Work Cover Authority license, which you have to actually have a specific license with Victorian Work Cover to be able to do that line of work. And I believe TAC might be the same as well. So they'll set themselves up and then they'll possibly employ a few of their colleagues or other people and basically run an investigation firm, in inverted commas, to make a living that way.
Because they would have abilities that none of us would have, wouldn't they? Like, they'd have expertise that... as far as some of those crimes that none of us would even think about, I would have thought. Am I right?
Oh, look, definitely. They've certainly got a skill set and some training and experience that would put them in good stead. But equally, it could also work the other way, that their training and experience and the sort of the black and white element of that could work against them being a bit more creative in the field. So... there's sort of swings and roundabouts there, but look, it's fair to say that without knowing a percentage, I would suspect that probably at least more than half of the private investigators in Victoria would be former police officers.
Were they that high? Oh,
I would have thought so, yeah.
Oh, right. That's getting up, but I guess it's... the police can get out, can't they? Like, I think it's after 30 years of service, and so they're not old men, some of these people. I mean, some of them become career and they stay until they're 65 and that, but I think it's around 30 or something that they can get out with full entitlement. So they've still got quite a lot of life left in some of those guys, haven't they?
Oh, definitely. And look, and clearly if you've been in the police force for 30 years, you'd have a wealth of experience and a wealth of knowledge and... Yeah. Equally, probably a wealth of contacts as well. So that's probably just as important in this industry as well.
Peter, unfortunately, I've got to go. We've put a song up, which I know is your favourite singer, Pink Floyd with Bike. Thank you for your time again. We look forward to seeing you in December, and then we'll have a break in January, and you've agreed to come back next year, so we'll get back into it next year. But we look forward to seeing you on the first Monday in December.
Yeah, thanks for having me again, Alan.
We're happy to have you. And by then, I hope you've got all your Christmas shopping done because I haven't even started.
Same here.
Thanks, Peter. We'll talk to you next month.
Thank you. Bye. Bye.